We're up to the 18th chapter, Perek Yudchet and Shmuel Aleph, page 118 in our new packets.
They're nice and clear, that's great.
They are clear, huh? Wow. Okay. At this point, David defeated Goliath, and one of the deals was that he was going to not only be very rich, but he'd also end up marrying the king's daughter. The question is, which one? He had more than one daughter. So we're going to see that in this parak, among other things.
And my husband told me something very interesting.
Yeah.
David is a descendant of Rus, which we know, and it turns out that Goliath is a descendant of Oprah.
Right.
From Ophrah, so like the two of them, Ruth and Ophrah, were the two daughters-in-law of Naomi.
Right.
Ophrah went back, and Ruth stayed with Naomi. And
right.
Here, David is the descendant of Ruth, and Goliath is the descendant from Ophrah.
So very good. Yes. So they met again. Their children. Excellent.
Cousins.
Yes. Okay. So we're on the first pasuk on Perek Yudchet. Vayhi kekalosol adaber el shaul. So after David and Shaul, the king, were speaking, v'nefesh Yehonasan nikshra v'nefesh David. Yehonasan, which was one of the king's sons, became very close to David. Interesting, the language nikshra, like they became tied to one another, one soul to the other. And in fact, it's brought down over here in the Mesunas Sion, that another place where we find such a powerful language of two people who are tied to one another, Mesunas Sion tells us, V'chein b'nafsho k'shura b'nafsho. And this is brought down in Genesis chapter 44, specifically by Yaakov Avinu and his son Binyamin, that he was concerned, I don't want my child to leave, to go to Egypt, as Yosef was devoured by animals. Possibly also Binyamin will, and I'm so close and connected to him, like a father and a son, a very close, intimate relationship. So too was the relationship of David and Yonasan. We're going to discuss why that was such a unique relationship in a few moments. But continuing in this pasuk, Vayehavehu Yonasan Kenasha, says that Yonasan loved him just like his own soul, like his own nefesh. We look at the Mesunas, David, he picks up on this idea of first it talks about how they finished speaking with his father's Shaul, and then all of a sudden he started loving him. So the Mesunas David, we're going to see both of them now. The first, Ladaber, after he was done speaking, Hu Hadaber Sha'amar Shehu Ben Yisha. The thing which was very special was that David acknowledged that he was the son of Yishai. Now, what was amazing that Yonasan heard was Yonasan was expecting that David, who just defeated the most powerful man on the planet, you would think he'd be able to start bragging. You have some bragging rights, after all. You saved the day. But all David was talking about was not himself, but about his father, how great my father is. So Yonasan heard this and said, wow, this is obviously a very humble man, a very special person. And because of this, he's obviously a person I'd like to have a relationship with. The Nefesh, the Mesunas David, continues and says that their soul, Retzel Omar, V'oz v'shmo Yonasan shigamhu ben Adam Gadol, nikshura nafsho b'nefesh David. Once he heard that he had great yichus, a great pedigree, he was related to special people like Jesse, Yishai, then he became very close to him. And it makes sense, because after all we know that they're now going to become family. He was going to marry his sister. So he was probably wondering, who is this beast, this man who's able to wrestle lions and bears? Probably some wild man, a savage in the battlefield. No. He was a man who has chosavos, a great man by his own right, and also he has chosavos. And therefore, because of this, says the Mesunas David, that could be another reason why Yonasan loved him, because then he realized he really is fit to marry a princess such as my sister. Okay. Continuing in the... you can see, Mishmatzos Zohar brings down the relatively famous Mishnah, the Mishnah in Perkei Avos, that says, what type of love will endure? What type of love will last? So it says in Perkei Avos in the fifth chapter that it has to be something which is she'ena tluya b'davar, something which is not attached or connected to something. So we often tell our children that people should not like you for what you have, but for what you are, right? Because if a person loves you for what you have, as soon as your Xbox breaks, they're not coming over your house anymore. They don't care about you. They don't really care about you. They care about your possessions. That's not something which is going to last. That's not eternal. It has to be something she'ena tluya b'davar, something which is not connected to something external. And the Mishnah in Perkei Avos says, what is an example of a love which was she'ena tluya b'davar? Zu ahavas David b'yonasan. That relationship between unconditional love. That's what David and Yonasan expressed. And some explain that of all people, Yonasan, you would think, would be the most jealous, would be the person who would look at David as the greatest of enemies. Why? He's a great man. He's on, you know, he serves your father. He serves the king. But you see that he's a threat to your throne. He's probably going to be, you know, he's rallying tremendous troops, and a lot of people respect him. He may become the next king, and he'll, you know, swipe the throne from underneath your feet. So Yonasan, of all people, you would think would hate him. So the fact that he showed love, that shows it was absolutely unconditional. It was regardless of what would happen. Regardless of, okay, fine, you'll be the next king. That's okay. I still care about you. And brought down that another example of something which is shleina tuliya b'davar is the difference between something which is ruchnius or gashmius in nature, spiritual or physical. She'im mitras ha'ava, he k'dei lohosiv yira v'das Hashem. Because if you look at a relationship, then it's a way to be able to instill greater levels of fear and knowledge of Torah and mitzvos. U'mishtatven es ha'kodesh baruch hu, and it causes you to become a partner, to be a chavrusa, so to speak, with one another. Yesh l'kesher zeh koach shel nitzchios v'kiyum tamidi. This is something which will last forever. Which basically, what it's telling us is that when it comes to a relationship which is spiritual, spirituality is something which is eternal. The physical world, like all things, ask your accountant as tax season's coming, things depreciate, things lose its value until it eventually reaches its residual value. But things depreciate. That's everything which is physical in this world. And therefore, a relationship which is more based on ruchnius, on spirituality, that's something which will last forever. That's something which will last the test of time. Will constantly endure. And that's also the reason why, as it's brought down, that when Yosef brought gifts to his father, he says that he brought the greatest things of Egypt. And it says he brought wine, gave him old wine. And Chazal tell us that why did he give his father old wine? It says because elderly people enjoy a good bottle of old wine. Question is, what does that mean? Is it because they're getting drunk? They like passing out? You know, they like having a few nice stiff drinks? So, you like sherry? Okay. But it says that something which is special to give to an elderly person, you give them a nice cup of old wine. That makes them feel really good. Okay, maybe on a nice cold day, it might make everyone feel good. But they explain that the significance is because when it comes to the entire world, everything depreciates. The entire physical world, no matter what it is, this book today is in better condition. If I put it on a shelf and come back to it in 30 years, even if I don't touch it, it will fade. Things will happen to it. Your car, look at the book value of a car from the time that you buy it until a year later. It depreciates extremely fast. The one exception to the rule is wine, right? The more you keep it, the older it gets better with age.
And some violins.
violins. I'm not sure why Yosef didn't give his father a violin. Maybe he didn't know how to play. But the idea is that he gave him this old wine, and that's something which he appreciated, because he realized Yosef, who lives in the most corrupt of societies, a society which focuses on the physical world, he obviously only cares about the spiritual world, because this is what he's showing value in. Like old wine, so too the spirituality. A person gets better in age spiritually. A person grows and refines themselves and polishes their neshamos spiritually. And therefore, this is also the idea of the relationship of David and Yonasan. That even though David and Yonasan really, you would think, are rivals, they should be banging heads to one another, nonetheless, they loved one another because it was a ruchnius, it was a spiritual relationship, and if you can base a relationship with spirituality, then that's something which will endure. And before we continue with the next pasuk, that's no coincidence that we often find in marriage, in relationships with a husband and wife, that if you connect spiritually, that you have the same philosophies, same hashkafot, that's something which is an easier way for a husband and wife to be able to live harmoniously. But in the situation where you say, well, I'm not really religious, so I'll intermarry, but then eventually end up having kids, you know the whole story ends up happening. So therefore, it's very important that a person should be connected and have spiritual chemistry as well.
It looks like, it's really Yohanan that someone loves David. Is right. It reciprocal?
I would imagine it is, but I guess the chiddush is that Yohanan loves him. You know, David... Why? Of course, I want to have a relationship with a prince, but even the prince loves me. But yeah, it does sound like it's a one-way street, at least the way the psukim are written. That's what it does sound like, but it's understood, certainly the Mishnah in Perkei Avos sounds that way, that it was reciprocal, that David and Yonasan loved one another unconditionally. Shena Tuliya B'Davar. Pasuk Beis. Okay. Continuing in the next pasuk, tells us Vayikachehu Shaul b'yomahu, that Shaul was taken, took him on this day, from the son of Lashub Beis Aviv, and David was no longer allowed to go back home. He wasn't supposed to go back to his father's house. Because remember, what did he do? He was a shepherd, right? Which is, you know, a decent profession. But for someone who would be marrying a princess, that's, you know, not dignified anymore. So some explain that's the reason why he didn't want him to go back home, because otherwise he would end up doing something which would be beneath that of someone who would be marrying the king's daughter. It's actually brought down the Al-Shech. He explains a different explanation, maybe more of a negative slant. He says, it's not here, but I'm just going to read this one line out loud. He says that Shol Chashav, that Shol thought she'alidei shehoi b'meso, that at least if he would not leave and go to a different part of the country, if you'd watch him in his palace, lo yuchul hachris al atzmul melech, it would be impossible that David would be able to acknowledge and to try to rally other people around to try to become the next king. Kli arev elibo lasos kain, it would be too difficult for him to do such. So therefore, Shaul, who knew that David had this ability to inspire many people, thought, let me watch him. Let me keep a close eye on him in my palace. I don't want him to go back home where he could gain greater levels of popularity and then maybe overthrow my being the king. Therefore, I'm going to watch him and keep him where I can see him. Pasuk Gimel. Vayichros Yonasan v'David bris. So you have this, again, this incredible relationship of Yonasan and David, who create this covenant, they loved each other just like their own soul. It's such an incredible bond. And we noticed, as we've seen before, Yonasan sometimes is written with the hay and without the hay. The yud and the hay together obviously acknowledges some level of spirituality, because that's Hashem's name. So again, it shows that the relationship that Yonasan and David had was a spiritual connection, one to the other. Pasuk Dalet, v'yispashed Yonasan as hame'il asher alav. So Yonasan removed his robe, his garments from him. V'yinehu David, his robes, which represent he was a powerful king, he gave them to David. V'madav v'yad charbo v'yad kashto v'yad chagoro. And he gave him his madav, his war, his armor, and his sword, and his bow, and his belt. And it's brought down on page 119 in English, and I'll just read this, which is on the next page. It says, where it says 3-4, Jonathan made a covenant purely out of love, not to protect himself, and signified it by taking his robe and battle gear, which were most important to him as a warrior, and giving them to David. So he was really making himself vulnerable, taking off his weapons, saying, I completely trust you, that I want to have a relationship with you, a peaceful relationship, and here's my sword. Another idea, perhaps again on a different negative slant, is that Yonasan saw that David was an incredible warrior. Yonasan was an incredible warrior by himself. So remember, he and one other person basically started an entire war against the Plishtim, which caused a miraculous victory. But he noticed that David was a very, very powerful and successful warrior. And therefore, by giving over the sword, could symbolically show that I want you to be able to be involved in the wars, because I see that you're a greater soldier than I am. Pasuk, hey.
I'm not sure I recall, but did we read last, was before that, when Dov was going out to fight, he removed all these things from himself as well?
Right, David, when he fought Goliath himself, he had nothing. He didn't have a sword. In fact, when he basically hit Goliath with the stone, he actually had to walk up to him and use his own, not his own sword, not David's, but Goliath's, because he didn't have one for himself.
But is it the same description in terms of accessories that were
he did wear Shaul's armor, which was also miraculous that it was, because Shaul's heads and shoulders above everyone, and it got smaller, which, and he didn't want to wear it, because it might have been a Nayan Hara, or he wasn't equipped to wear it.
If it's the same items, if they're mentioned here the same way, if there's any kind of significance to it.
Right. I'm not finding the pasuk, which I should, but it's something to look up. It's in the previous parak, and he doesn't have a sword or anything. I don't see the exact pasuk. We also mentioned the reason why he didn't want a sword is because he was trying to entice, incite him to get him angry. Like, I don't have a sword or anything. He's like, who are you? But I'm not sure exactly what the weapons are. But something to look up. Okay, let's continue with the next pasuk. Vayetze David went out. B'chol asher yishlochenu Shaul yaskil. And no matter what, whenever Shaul sent him out to war, yaskil. Yaskil is translated as in the Masuda Sion as yatsliach. We're going to see that word translated in the Rashi and again Masuda Sion. Yaskil is always brought down over here. He had seichel, but it means he was successful in every time he fought. Yasimu Shaul al Anshi Melchama. Therefore, Shaul the king placed him among all the warriors in charge of them. V'ita be'eni ko'am v'gan be'eni Avdi Shaul. And it was good in the eyes of the nation, in the eyes of all the Avdi Shaul, all the servants of Shaul. Everyone showed tremendous respect for him. And what was unique about this, says the Radak in Pasuk Hey, that Hariboy Hazeh, the fact that it says it was even good, even Gam, the Enei Avdi Shaul, the servants of Shaul, is Ratzel Omer, Shulkanu Bo Avdi Shaul. They didn't have any jealousy for him either. Apo Pishanusimlo Malalehim, even though he was placed above them, there's nobody, there's someone who has no military experience, he just fought one time in his life, he ended up fighting an amazing duel against Goliath, winning. Now all of a sudden he gets chosen, he gets this great position. Who's he? I've been fighting for years and years. No one showed any kindle, no one had any jealousy toward David. They had tremendous, tremendous respect for him. Pasuk Vav. Vayehi bevoel b'shuv David mihakos as a plishti, and it came that after when David would finished fighting the Philistines, obviously, with extreme success. Betetzena hanashim mikol ari Yisrael. Oh, here come the women. The women came out, and what were they doing? Lashir, they were singing the praises of this guy, this great man, this great warrior David. The macholos likras shaul hamelech. They were singing and they were dancing, greeting this man who was the officer, this powerful man for the king. But and they greeted him, batuvim, besimcha, uvashilishim, with drums, with joy. Shalishim comes to the word shalosh, three. And the Mesudas Sion tells us, klishir v'al shlosha yeterim. This is referring to some type of instrument which had three strings, a three-stringed instrument of some sort, whatever that may be. Oh, it says symbols? It's a different interpretation. Mr. Desion, I guess, focus on the word shalishim, that it has, the shorosh is three, so they think it has something with a three-stringed instrument of some sort. Okay, but either way, they were playing, and they were a huge band was going on. It was quite a fiesta. Pasuk Zayin. So what were they singing, and what were they saying? They must have been saying something nice. And it's very good to say something nice. The problem is, don't speak negatively about anyone else in the process, which was something which they did. So as the women were answering and they were so rejoiceful and singing, this is what they called and cried out. That Shaul, this great guy by the name of Shaul, who happens to be our king, when he fights, he can kill 1,000. But by the way, but David, birbovosov. David, when he kills, he can do it birbovosov, which Mesudas Sion helps us out, even though we know this word from the end when we put away the Sefer Torah on Shabbos. Nonetheless, birbovosov is revava, is who? Aseres alafim. 10,000. Shaul, you're pretty good. You can kill 1,000 guys. But compared to David, you're a nobody. You know, you're in the minor leagues. You're in the AAA. You're in the peewees. Compared to David, he can kill 10,000 in one foul swoop. So this was a way to praise David, which I guess the idea of praising him is if you would say David can kill 10,000, it's like, well, is that good or bad? You know, is that incredible? So if you compare him to Shaul, the great warrior Shaul, who can only kill 1,000, wow, that's unbelievable. He must be really something else. He must be really something to look at. Pasuk Ches. Now everyone was so impressed. Everyone loved their songs. They probably made it to the top 10. However, there was one guy that was not so impressed. The king. But Yichor l'Shaul Ma'od. This infuriated got Shaul so angry. V'yera be'enav ha'davar. It got very, it was terrible. Hazed, this thing was very bad. On page 120. V'yomer nasnu David revavos. The Linus Nulov. I am, you hear what the lyrics to this song? This is terrible lyrics. It says that I can only kill 1,000, he can kill 10,000. So they're humiliating me. They're saying that he's a better warrior, he's a more powerful man. What's next? All of a sudden, probably the next thing in line, he's going to take my throne. Right? You know, if they weren't singing these songs, maybe this guy, the king, wouldn't have been so upset. But now all of a sudden, it's triggering some emotion. So you have to be very careful. Even the common people can cause a tremendous uproar and problems for the very powerful. But he Shaul Oyein as David. Interesting. This we'll have to see what the significance of this. The way it's written is without a yud, and then it's Oyein as David. The Ayomahu Bahalo, that Shaul would be eyeing David from this day. On. He would constantly be watching him. Right? Fine. So, which he's keeping a sharp eye on him. Right? Want to make sure that he's not going to try to take over the throne. So, if we look at Rashi over here, what does he mean? He was eyeing him. He was keeping an eye on him. So this is, as we mentioned before, the same thing with the armor, which shrunk miraculously. Ayin comes from Ayin Hara. He was giving him the evil eye. He was watching. He was giving the evil eye. And because of this, it was a serious problem, because if the king has it in for you, there's a very good chance you're going to be in some serious trouble. Now, it's brought down, what is the significance of this change from with the yud? If you see the pasuk test, it's with the yud. The way it's read, the way it's written is ayin vav nun without a yud. Now, ayin is spelled ayin yud nun. So why is it written without the nun, without a yud, which is not the proper way of reading the word I? So it's explained that avon means what? A chet, a sin. Very good. So he said, it's brought down that it's coming to allude to the fact that Shaul, he did not at this point, let me read this one line. The Esher Shabal Lahoros Shalhaisa Sinasu B'Shlemus. He did not completely hate David 100%. The Esher Shabal Aram is Blushan Avon V'Chet Shayro Chet L'David B'Davar Zeh Shigarim L'Tsar. He thought, you know what, there may be a reason why all these problems are happening to me. Shaul was looking not outside, externally, but he was looking within. He was wondering, perhaps it's because I have a flaw, which he knew. He knew he made mistakes. He knew he made mistakes with Amalek allowing Agag to live. He made mistakes as a melech. So he said, you know what, maybe the reason why these problems are happening to me is because of Avon, is because of this sin. Maybe the reason why I'm hearing these songs and I'm hearing all these people saying that I'm second best is because I have chisronos, I have lacks, I have made mistakes. And therefore, that's how some explain the significance of the word avon. Which is most interesting, it's brought down in the Gemara and Menachos, that we know that when Shaul was initially offered the position of being a king, he wasn't jumping up and down like he won the Powerball. Instead, he was hiding in the coat room, and they had to, where is he, where did he go? And they had a lottery system, and they finally found him. He did not want the position. And now all of a sudden, his whole life, he's like holding on to it. Make up your mind. Did you want the job? You don't want the job. So the Gemara says a very interesting language. It says, Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachia, he said, Rabbi Yeshua said, Betchila, initially, kol omerli olala, initially, if anyone would say to me, Rabbi Yeshua, I want you to accept this exalted position, I, who was so humble at the time, ani kavsa v'nasnu lifnei ha'ari, I would have forced that person into the lion's den. Which, obviously, he's not going to kill anyone. He said, I would do anything for, don't say such a thing, I'll kill you, don't stop, don't talk, I don't want it. This is how Rabbi Yeshua ben Parchia felt. Atah, now that I do have this great position, this exalted position, kol ha'omerli, li'arid bimena, anyone who would say, why don't you step down from this position? Ani matelav kumkim shulchamin, I would place upon them some hot water. I'd take my coffee and splash them in the face. Sharish, and he says that that's also what we find here. Sharishol barch mimenu. Shaul initially, he ran away from Gedula, from his greatness. Sha'olah, but once he was exalted, because Shaharga's David, he already wanted to kill David. So we find, interestingly, the mind. What was that? I guess you could say it that way. Yeah, but it's fascinating how we see this change. And Yeshua ben Parchia is saying that on himself, obviously, saying it in a very facetious manner. He obviously is not going to kill anyone. He's not going to throw any boiling hot coffee on them. It'd be a lawsuit in his hands. Anyway, but that's the idea. When a person is put up to this position, he doesn't want to lose. He wants to retain that power for as long as they possibly can. Okay, let's continue. Pasuk Yud. Vayimi Mecharas. It was on the morrow, the next day, Batislach Ruach Elkim Ra'el Shaul. There was this evil spirit which came upon Shaul, which we heard occurred many times. That was the reason why David played the harp to soothe him. David was a terrific musician, and that's why he was initially hired. That was the first time he made it into the palace. This Navi B'Socha Bayis. Oh, interestingly enough, Shaul became a Navi. Right? That's what it says, Vyasnavi. But it says in English, he raved incoherently. We'll see, what does that mean? A Navi raves incoherently? We'll get to that in a second. But David menagein biado kiyom biyom. And David would be menagein, he would be the one who would be doing the playing the music, kiyom biyom, all the time, as the Mesudas David here tells us, kemo shiraga b'chol yom yom. He did this all every day. Whenever he had this evil spirit that befell the king, he would always play for him every single day. Now, while he was playing the harp and enjoying, you probably can imagine, you know, the visual of David's playing with his eyes closed, you know, enjoying the beautiful music of the sounds of the harp, what was Shaul doing at the time? The Chanis Biad Shaul. Shaul was holding on to something. He was holding on to a spear. Right? What else does a king do? He's holding on to a spear. All right. We're going to see in a few moments what he does with that spear. But before we get to that, what does it mean that he became a Navi? Vyasnavi. That's what the word really says. It's Navi. But for some reason, the translation in the English on page 121 is that he raved incoherently, which is very strange. A Navi doesn't, you wouldn't say that about a Navi, that they just rave incoherently. So we look at the Rashi over here. Rashi tells us in Pasuk Yud, what does it mean, Vyasnavi? V'ish tati. Sounds like the word shota. Insane. Navi v'shota medabrim dibi remazim she'enu nikarim. A Navi, a prophet, as well as someone who's a shota, someone who's completely off the wall, they both speak in hinted forms that are not so recognizable. They'll say strange sentences. Now, if you're a Navi, if everyone knows you're a Navi, they're going to say, oh, wow, what was that? Let's try to break the code, right? Let's try to decode. What on earth was he trying to say? But if the guy's a shota, he's just saying stuff. But gibberish, exactly. So that's what Shaul was saying. He sounded just like a Navi would sound. But unfortunately, he was really, really sounding like a shota. He was speaking incoherently. In fact, it's brought down in the Gemara. The Talmud tells us, nowadays, there are no Nevi'im. We don't have prophets, right? You know, you can call up all these psychic hotlines if you want, but you'll just have a very expensive phone bill. But there's no such thing as a Navi, but that you can actually speak to, and they'll be able to give you some good advice. But there is some Nevuah, the Gemara in Bava Basra says. It was given over to two people, to the Tinuk, to an infant, as well as to the Shota, to the insane, right? Those people actually were given some level of Nevuah, that sometimes you can actually listen to them, and maybe sometimes they'll say something which makes sense. But sometimes, very often, they don't. So that's, unfortunately, the category where Shaul fell, that he was acting like a shota, and David would intervene to play for him. Pasuk Yud Aleph. What was that?
It's a strange expression.
Right. In other words, Betocha Bayit, I guess, could be translated as in his palace. How is it translated here? It says he's in the house, right? In the house. I'm not.
Maybe that's a living quarters of the palace.
No, I understand what you mean. They're just saying it's a strange.
It could mean like the bias could be actually where he his own bedroom or something.
Excuse me, I'm just saying that.
Right.
You don't need those two words.
Yeah. No, I understand.
You almost don't need Bayit Nabe either, because it
had
that kind of double meaning.
He really wasn't there, Nabe. Why
would they even use that? Right. Oh, unless maybe
if he didn't help get it in
the
house,
maybe
that they could intervene with him. I'm looking at the Betocha Bayit
could mean that no one, like some.
Else, right?
No one wanted to know that the king was. We find that very often with. Powerful people, you know, we don't want to reveal their problems. Could be. That could be why it's Betocha Bayit, so the paparazzi wouldn't know his problems. Okay. That's nuts. Could be. All right, let's move on. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayotel Shaul Esachanis. Okay, Vayatel Sholas Hakonis Vayatel, he sent out his spear. And again, the visual, imagine you have David on the other side, maybe he's not even facing the king, maybe he's facing the wall, and he's playing the harp, and he's loving it, his spirit is soaring. And Shaul, in the meantime, is boiling, his blood is boiling. He takes his spear, and what is he going to do? Yomer, and he says, Akeb David Vakir, I'm going to throw this spear toward David in the wall. Beitzav David Mipanu Pamayim. Unbelievably so, David was missed two times. He's having dart practice, and he's throwing spears at David, and it smashes right into the wall, and you can imagine, right next to his head here, right over there. Imagine he has an apple on his head, and it keeps just missing him. And apparently, David had no clue about this. I mean, I guess a huge spear stuck in the wall about 2 inches from your head, that would be a big giveaway. But,
he was so into his music.
Yeah, he was probably, he had his headphones on, and he was dancing away. So that's what he did. And Mesudas David explains that Akeb David Vakir, what's along with it is to say that Hika Chazaka, when he threw it, he wasn't just doing a nice little throw, an underhand throw. He did it with as much force as he could, and he was a soldier. He was trained also. It wasn't just some nobody. Me throwing a spear, not going to do much. But this guy, that was his whole life. That's what Shaul did. He was a professional. And he threw this spear, Hika Chazaka, Ada Shetichlev Gov David Betichnas Od Bakir. It would be so powerful that he would be able to throw it, and without getting too gross, it would be able to go right through David and stick right into the wall. That's how powerful, if he would be able to actually hit David, he would be able to do that. That's how powerful that was.
Maybe David
said arm.
This is another test of Hashem wanting to be the king, because you can't say he wasn't aware of what's going on. It doesn't make sense to say that.
Well, I guess we'll have to see that. It doesn't. We're going to see that it doesn't say anywhere.
Because David alluded him twice. It doesn't say he was oblivious twice. The first time, maybe he didn't know.
Yeah, it could be. It doesn't say anywhere. It doesn't really show so much that we're going to see in the Pesukim that David really knew that he was going to be killed, he was trying to be killed by this guy. But, or maybe he did know, but he didn't want to reveal it, because otherwise he'd be in bigger trouble. That's possible as well.
Or maybe just when it was a mood that Shaul was in a crazy mood, and this would pass, it almost makes the most sense that if the king is going a little bit nuts, which
right.
sounds like he is, you see people who have moods
right.
that come upon them, and they're violent, try to calm them down, and you hope that it passes, and you live with it. And you
right.
think he's not really trying to kill me, he's just a little bit off his head at the moment. Right. So he starts playing a little bit nicer, faster.
Right, a little
brighter.
Yeah, a little better.
And it's today's day, you give the medication. Those days you play some more.
Right.
Malam comes
right. So that's... Right. Prosecute that. But Yerushal Milithnei David. All of a sudden, Shaul realized there was something special about this guy. And he began to fear David. Ki hoya Hashem imo me'im Shaul sar. First of all, Shaul realized that Hashem was no longer with him. But more importantly, he noticed that Hashem imo. Hashem has to be with this guy. Because anyone else, I would need two spears. One is more than enough. I don't need more than one bullet in my gun. I could do the job in one shot. So there's something very special about him. V'yasirehu Shaul mi'imo v'yisimehu lo sar olef v'yitzev yavu lifnei ha'am. So what ended up happening, Shaul could have obviously killed him with his own hands, but instead he said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this person and I'm going to place him among officers of thousands and I'm going to have him go in front of the nation. And we're going to see in a moment the significance of why he's doing this. Pasuk Yud Dalet. Vayhi David l'chol derachav maskil Hashem ima. That David began to fight. Shaul said, this guy is obviously protected by Hashem. I'm going to have him as a powerful soldier for myself. General. And Hashem was maskil. Maskil, again, is translated here. Rashi tells us, is masliach. Hashem caused David's actions to constantly be successful. Hashem imo. Hashem was with him every single step of the way. Pasuk Tet Vav continues. Vayar Shaul asher hu maskil ma'od. Vayar gum yiponim. So Shaul saw that he was being not just successful, throws in the word ma'od, very successful. Vayar gum yiponim, the Masuda Siyan Vayogas Pachad. He had tremendous fear. He feared him tremendously. Shaul was petrified of David because he was so protected by God. V'chol Yisrael v'Yehuda oev es David. And here David was, everyone's beginning to love him. All the Jewish people, Yehuda. Ki hu yotzei uvol lifneihem. Because he wasn't the type of soldier who would be a general who's on the back, on the top field, barking orders, waving flags, telling each person to do whatever. He was in the trenches. He was ready to fight. And he was more than willing to lead everyone to battle. That was the type of person he was.
Why does it repeat Israel v. Yehuda? What's
special about Yehuda? Why Yehuda in particular? Why that Shevet? Why that?
What's represented by Yehuda? Is that a separate area?
Well, I mean, I didn't see anything on it. I thought perhaps because Yehuda has to do with the Malchus, that Yehuda represents, even though Shaul is not from Sheva Yehuda, but we know that the next king comes from Yehuda, so it's very important that he has to gain respect from that particular group of people in order to be able to be the next king. Not just Israel, but even Yehuda. That's otherwise, I'm not really sure why they single that out. That's the only way I understood that. But he would go in front, and he would be more than willing to go and to be involved in battle. Fine. Pasuk Yod Zayin. V'yomer Shaul el David. So Shaul said, "Hine biti hagadola mirav osa. I have a beautiful daughter. She happens to be my oldest daughter, and her name, which you may have heard, her name is Mirav. Etin locha leisha." I am going to allow you, David, to marry this daughter of mine, and you're going to be married to my daughter, Merav. That's going to be that'll be the name of your wife, Merav. Achayeli leben chayel. Now, I did promise you're going to marry one of my daughters, but to marry the Biti Hagadola, that's a tremendous honor. In order for you to do that, you have to fight. You have to be a warrior. The Elochim Lachamas Hashem. You have to give something back, after all. You're marrying not just my daughter, but the most prominent of daughters, my oldest. So you have to be constantly involved in fighting. Shaul Omer, al tihi yadi bo, v'tihi bo yad plishtin. Now what was Shaul Omer, what did he say? He said, I don't want to be involved in his downfall. Let the plishtin kill him. So why would he announce this? Shaul Omer, he says it out loud on the loudspeakers. He prints it in the USA Today on the front page. Rashi says, the word Omar doesn't mean he said it, but rather it's Belibo. Rashi says he thought it. This was his motive. That was his MO. Why did he want him to marry his oldest daughter, which David would understand he would have to give something back by constantly being involved in the most fierce of battles against the most powerful nation, the Plishtim in the world? It's because I do not want my hands bloodied. I don't want the blood on my hands. And Rashi says an interesting word over here. Alti yadi bo pen anish. I don't want to kill him myself, because if that would happen, God's going to punish me if I do it, because what right do I have to kill him? He didn't do anything wrong. But if he's fighting, which there's constantly wars, that he bo yad plishtim. Let the plishtim kill him. But kach omer, that's the reason why I said, v'ilochim l'chamos Hashem. I want you to go and to fight. Because that will be a method, that'll be an easy way for you to die.
Desperate anyhow, because nothing makes sense considering what went on before this.
He understood right. That Hashem was with him.
Right.
And he also was ready to kill him.
Right.
So,
right. So therefore this was...
Desperate.
Right.
But what an irony that David used the same strategy.
Oh, very good. That's exactly right. That's right. So he obviously understood it worked. Very good.
It did work for David.
Yes. It didn't work with this time. It'll work next time.
Yeah, why?
Okay. All right. Let's just see a couple more. One more pasuk, and we'll stop. The Yomer David El Shaul. David said, Mi anochi? Who am I? Mi chai? Who is my life? Who am I? Mishpachas avi b'Yisrael, to among the families of my father b'Israel. Kiyeh chasan l'melech. Of course, I deserve to be a chasan, but a chasan l'melech, to marry the daughter, to marry such a prominent family, I don't feel like I'm worthy of such a position. And because of this, Pasuk Yotes, Vayehi be'eis teis es merab ba'shal l'david, Vayehi nitna l'adri'el ha'mecholasi l'isha. In the meantime, he said, I want you to marry Merav. Now, probably when you were hearing this, like, Merav, did David really marry Merav?
No.
So this is what the next pasuk says. Then in the meantime, when he was saying, I don't deserve such an honor, he wasn't given such an honor. Because in the interim, while he was given the possibility of marrying Merav, Nitna, she was given to Adriel. Adriel is a different person. Laisha, as a wife. So therefore, because of this, Merav was no longer available. And we'll see the next pasuk that instead he'll be given not the oldest, but a different, someone who he'll end up marrying, someone that she loves him very much, by the name of Michal. And Michal eventually will. That's the name of the place. That's the name of his origin. Okay, we'll stop here. We'll continue.